Hello and welcome to the Peach Basket. Today, the pundits will provide perspectives about postseason progress. This is Basket Hall, here with my co-host PJ in studio. PJ.
Live and on location.
And BMO, how you doing?
Doing well, gentlemen.
Good. Well, now that we've made it through some more technical difficulties, we are up and rolling. And I think first point of order, actually, is to identify that Peter is officially wearing his LaMelo Ball Hornets jersey. So
rocking it.
Hey-o!
Got a picture to prove it. We've got documentation. Definitely post that out there for folks to see. And he's loving it. He's agreed to it all the time.
The next question is, how long before you take it off? I mean, are you going to wear it for a week? Are you going to wear it out in public? What's the end game for this jersey here?
I feel like I may have to wear it to a pickup basketball game near you. So,
yes.
Something to look forward to.
You might get mistaken for the ball. All right. So definitely had to get that taken care of. Glad that we finally got you a jersey. Nice. Brenton, I don't know if you had a chance. Do you have a sponsor for today's podcast?
Today's sponsor is coffee, brought to you from the richest fields all over the world. Today's sponsor is coffee.
Beautiful. That's a good one. How did you respond when the CEO of coffee called you to
sponsor the podcast? You know, I played a little hardball. He wanted a little bit bigger cut than what I was expecting to give up. So we played a little hardball, and in the end result, it worked out for the benefit of everybody.
Wow. Well, you're a good man having those negotiations, so we appreciate that. All right. So let's run through, because we just had some exciting game sevens yesterday. Second round semifinals are done, moving on to the conference finals. A lot to get through. We can run through each of the series and talk about what we expected to happen for folks that might have missed our last podcast, and really document who is doing well with predictions and what do we see going forward. So let's start over with Eastern Conference. We'll do Miami over the Sixers. And that was a 4-2 victory for Miami. So six games, they took it out. I will say all three of us claimed that Miami would win. So that was at least in line with expectation. One of us correctly guessed the number of games, and that would be me. So I get a bonus point for that.
Gold star.
Yes, gold star.
All the shenanigans, you get those.
Yeah. So no real big surprise here, but Brent, let's start with you. What are your thoughts on that series? Did we just see playoff Harden disappear again and everything kind of went as expected? Or what are your big stories coming out of that series?
Well, I think Philadelphia is in a wee bit of trouble. I will say that without really knowing all the full behind the scenes details, but when you have your figurehead of the team being Joel Embiid saying that he believes his teammate has lost something since he came from Houston, I don't think that's a good sign. So I don't know what conversations are like between those two stars. James Harden gave us exactly kind of what we expected from James Harden, and that is to show up and play basketball, but not take it to that next level. So I think he's got a real problem in place as far as if he was looking for a big max contract from Philadelphia. I doubt that's currently on the table for them. The news that I'm hearing is they're going to ask him to take a pretty decent pay cut if he wants to stay with Philadelphia. And if he doesn't, I don't know where he goes from here. So those two guys need to find a way to work it out. I think that you have pieces in place that gets you to the next level. I think that Tyrese Maxey showed signs this year in the playoffs of being able to elevate his game. I just don't know if he's going to be able to consistently do it. And I don't know if Philadelphia has plans to move ahead with James Harden. And if they do, they've got their work cut out for them.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that. I think if Harden is willing to accept not a max contract, essentially they need to cut what they're paying him so that they can afford to go bring in some other players. if not, he's just gone after this, then Philly, you need to look like, yeah, you know, you had Ben Simmons, he wasn't playing for you, you got rid of him, no big deal. But you give up other folks in that trade to have nothing in return is not a good place to be.
No, they give up shooters, and with Danny Green's injury, I don't know what his status would be as far as coming back healthy. I mean, he's been a seasoned veteran for a while. They need some shooters on that team, and without those shooters surrounding Joel, I almost think that they have a chance to regress next year, unless they do something.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, you'll have regular season Harden, so they'll at least get some wins, but it's not going to help them pass that.
Yeah, and as we saw with Western Conference team, it doesn't matter if you have home court advantage throughout the entire playoffs. Sometimes that is not the key to advancing your team to the next round.
Yeah. Any thoughts on either Harden or Embiid or anyone else?
I've got a prediction for the Philadelphia 76ers for next season.
Okay, throw it at us.
I think Doc Rivers is getting fired.
Yep.
And I think they're bringing in Mike D'Antoni because the guy who's running the Sixers is Daryl Morey.
Yep.
Daryl Morey is best friends with James Harden. James Harden had his best career years with Mike D'Antoni as the head coach. So I think that this is the last piece of the puzzle.
Mm-hmm.
I think Doc was seemingly a little bit uncomfortable there when he was in his post-game presser when the series was over. And I think that that is what's going to happen.
Yeah, he should be nervous. I think I agree. I think he's probably gone. I would not be surprised to see D'Antoni there. I don't think ultimately it will work for them. I think they're trying to recapture the past, and when everybody's older and the rest of the league has in some ways taken some of the blueprint from what worked well with Houston and applied it themselves. I don't think you can do that again with an older version of Harden.
And what does that do for the confidence of Embiid? I mean, that's great that Harden and Morey and D'Antoni want to work together, but what does that say about Embiid? Like, is he just pushed off to the wayside and saying, you know, that you had your opportunity to win and now we're going to go a different direction? Or do you guys think that he kind of swallows his pride a little bit and fits into that equation? Because so both of you guys
have to start practicing some three-pointers.
Yeah. I mean, he did shoot a decent amount of threes this year. I don't think that's his forte. But if that's the case, I mean, it sounds like both of you guys don't think that this is a workable situation. So if they don't do anything next year, let's say that these scenarios play out, Rivers gets fired, D'Antoni comes in, they bring back Harden, and they go out and they find some other role players, and it still doesn't work, then what? Are you just imploding and starting over from scratch? Or are you looking to make a mega deal and dangle Joel Embiid out there? I mean, I don't think that that would be in their best interest, but what do you guys think?
No, I mean, I don't think that a lot of that's going to be, I'll say, explicit. I don't think they're going to say, yep, here's our plan. Let's minimize Embiid. Let's get Harden back, bring some shooters. I don't think they will do that intentionally to like bring down Embiid, but that is the effect it'll have. And I think you won't even get to the All-Star break before he's asking for a trade. And I think he'd be right to do so because this is a team that was essentially built around him. He was leading the team. I think he could have been MVP this season.
Mm-hmm.
Even coming through these playoffs, the guy is playing banged up, injured hand. He had a face mask on.
Broken face.
He's on the ground the whole time. I think it took a toll, but at the same time, like, he's out there trying to win, playing hard. And if he feels like he's not getting rewarded for that, he's gone.
Right. Right. And then, of course, you got the take where Jimmy Butler gave up the information, like, really, Tobias Harris? Mm-hmm. I mean, he is a Yeah, I mean, he's a former All-Star. I just don't know how he fits into that equation. I mean, he had some good first-round games, and that was clearly evident. And I thought that they were going to be able to take the next step moving ahead with that kind of starting five that they rolled out there. But, you know, then with Embiid getting hurt and having to jumble around lineups, he just kind of got swallowed up in the mix. And I don't think that he really did much.
No, he didn't. They're missing several pieces. If this was a situation where two players could, you know, carry a team well into the playoffs and win a championship, Harden and Embiid would be in great position, but that is not the NBA we live in. We just saw Durant and Kyrie couldn't get it done. They got struck by Boston.
Correct.
Need a strong team. You need depth, and you need more people around Harden and Embiid if you want to do anything. And I don't know. I think they do implode. I don't think they intentionally try and shut it down, restart, trust a new process. But I think ultimately they will regress. It will be a worse season. Mm. All right, so Miami's moving on. We'll catch up with them in a second. Let's go over to the other series in the East. So Boston, you had a great game 7 yesterday where they beat the Bucks. So, I mean, Boston, they're playing really well. They've had the best record since the All-Star break. They swept Brooklyn. We all thought actually the Nets might win that series. Mm. They just took out the defending champions. Give me some feedback on what you saw from that series out of Boston. And like, are they just, doesn't matter what's on their path, they're going to mow right through everybody?
Well, before you do that, who picked Boston to advance? Let's talk about that.
Yes, thank you. All three of us picked Boston.
Yes.
Peach Fancy Pundits, baby.
That's right.
We are a unified force in that regard.
We actually picked all the same except for one series in the West. So the differentiator was the number of games. And BMO, I'm excited for you because you said Celtics in 7, and that's exactly what happened. So you pick up the ball for this round.
Yes, extra gold stars for me.
Yeah, Peyton, I thought it would be in 6 games. So it's going to be a long series, but in the distance.
Yeah, I mean, the two game sevens that were yesterday, I think they came into it with a lot of hype. And I think that we're going to talk about the Western Conference here in a few minutes. But as far as the Eastern Conference, game seven to advance to the Eastern Conference Finals, I think that was kind of a letdown game as far as Milwaukee's concerned. They desperately missed Chris Middleton, desperately. And I think that for them, they have to look at and say, Giannis can do Giannis all day long, but if they're not stopping the three-point shot, which Boston shot very well yesterday, they've got some holes in that defense that were exposed, and I think that they probably need to address in their offseason. Not to say that Milwaukee played a bad game. I just think that the Celtics played a better game.
Yeah, I think they really did miss Chris Middleton. I think if he is active for this series, that Milwaukee could have gone on to win it. Mm-hmm. Now, we had that knowledge that he was out for the series beforehand, so I think that in the Celtics, but
yep. Yeah,
that was, they missed him, and they weren't, I guess, they're a deeper team, but they didn't have the strength deep. You don't have someone else that can step up and consistently be the guy. You got Drew Holiday who played well, and it was a good thing they had Brook Lopez back, but you needed someone else, some second fiddle to Giannis that can just be cool and get you some points when you need it.
Yeah, Bobby Portis can do that in spurts, but he's not going to be consistently able to be a solid contributor game after game. Mm-hmm. I just think that Boston showed that they were the better built team for this type of series. And they, again, they're playing pretty good defense, and they are finding a way to make the open man make his shots. And it's working for them.
Can we just talk about Grant Williams for a second?
Grant Curry.
Guy lit it up yesterday.
This guy, I was just checking the stat because I heard it live when I was watching yesterday, but I was just double checking it because I'm such a attention to detail pundit, you know.
Stat head.
Grant Williams tied the NBA record for most threes in a game 7 with 7 three-pointers. And yeah. I really believe that if Grant Williams does not hit those 7 3-pointers, then we were coming down to like a, you know, a tie game with about 15 seconds left. And then it's kind of a toss up as to who pulled that series out. So truly that was your classic game 7 surprise special.
Yeah.
From Chef Grant Williams.
They allowed him to, I forget how many it was, but he had like, what, 6 wide open looks pretty much.
Yeah. And Boston, they're going to pass it around until they can find the open man. And I think that's exactly what you need. And when you have a deep enough team where you can have people like that step up, you're going to win more often than not. And even outside of the game 7, look earlier in the series, the reemergence, the reemergence of Al Horford.
Oh yeah.
Like when you've got someone, first of all, with that experience and ability on your team that is willing to step into whatever role is needed, do whatever's needed to be done to win. Like, okay.
Launch fail guy.
Right. He's going to go out there. He's going to guard Giannis. He's going to give it his all. And then he's going to start banging threes and grabbing on boards. Like when you've got people like that on your roster and everyone is willing, they're like in it for the team. You need to go up against some juggernaut fully healthy and everything to actually lose.
Yeah. So Al Horford is definitely the oldest member of that team, and he played the most number of game time yesterday. Mm-hmm. So you talk about a guy that's like exactly what you said, Chris, willing to slide into any situation, do whatever the team requires of him, and just step up to the proverbial plate. I think that he is definitely a guy that other teams are wishing that they utilized him to his full potential.
Yeah, and worth pointing out, a former Atlanta Hawk.
Oh,
so,
hey-o!
ATL!
We got to get him back. Yeah, so any other hot takes on Boston versus Milwaukee?
I can't stand both teams, so it's really tough for me to even talk about this. Since I am a professional. My like biggest takeaways were the Horford game, which was I believe was game 4 or game 5, where he had 30 points. 11 of 14 shooting. I mean, that is just next level basketball savant.
He's an efficient player anywhere he is, you know.
That combined with, I think it was game 5 that he blew up, but he also had like 4 or 5 blocks in that game too. So the dude showed up to play on both sides of the ball and he did not disappoint.
All right, well, let's actually stay in the Eastern Conference. Let's play this forward then. So we got our matchup starting tomorrow night. We've got Boston versus Miami, 1 versus 2. So it kind of went pure chunk. Give me some predictions for that series. PJ, hit me.
Miami, Boston. You have two teams on different parts of the East Coast. You have Boston, you got the blue collar tea drinkers, and then you have the bathing in sunshine Miami Heat. This is a tough one to pick. From my initial listenings to the national pundits, Boston is being favored in this series, and I am going to do the old fashioned let's pump the brakes here on picking Boston in this series. From watching the Heat play Philly, the Heat are a very deep team. They plugged in this backup point guard, Vincent, and he was tearing it up for the Heat in those last couple of games in that. And I think a player to watch in this series is Tyler Hero. I believe he was the sixth man of the year, and he is somebody who can fill it up in a hurry. So the Heat are very solid on defense, and I think that they are going to beat Boston in the series, but I think it is going to go 7 games.
Okay. Bimo, what about you?
So I too think it's a deep series. I think we're in for another treat as far as basketball fans go, because I think this one is going to be very much a back and forth series. I think that this has the potential, like Pete and I just said, to go seven. I think that these games are going to be, for the most part, close games. I don't see any big blowouts, just the way these two teams are built. I think that you talk about momentum coming into a series, and that usually drives the outcome. I think that as well as the momentum you get from winning a game seven at home against the defending champs, I still don't think they're quite at that level of the Miami Heat. I think that the Heat are, even though they're not favored by other analysts, I think that they are probably the most championship ready team of the remaining four, with maybe you can, you know, disagree with what Golden State brings as far as experience goes. Jimmy Butler just has that tenacity that makes other guys want to win more. And I think I think that he is going to kind of take over for that Miami Heat team. And I don't think he's going to let guys slouch until they get the result that they want. So I think this is a deep series. I think it does go seven. And I think ultimately Miami does prevail.
Miami in seven as well. Is that what I'm hearing?
That is what I am putting down. Mark it down.
It has been so marked. So I got to go against both of you guys.
Okay.
I was laying out before Boston. They're essentially the best team since the All-Star break. Sweep the Nets, take out the defending champions, and you've got a mixture of folks stepping up to do it, really showing off the depth of the team. I like a lot of what they have going on right now. I don't think you can ignore that momentum. And while Miami is strong and they were the number one seed in the East, I saw that they were very reliant on outside shooting and so on, live and die by the three. They've been living by it. But Boston is one of the top defensive teams, and I think they're going to really make it difficult for Miami to get those open looks. I think defense is going to be, this is going to be a grittier series than what we'll talk about in the West. And I think Boston is more likely to prevail in that. I think you'll see some great games out of Miami. Jimmy Butler's going to step up, be awesome. But I think Boston at this point, with the momentum, they're just too much. I'm going Boston in six.
Wow. That's a bold statement, my friend.
And I'll say if it actually does go seven, I do think there's a lot that goes into home court advantage. And at that point, Miami would have the advantage and they could win that game seven. So I think Boston needs to do it in six. Otherwise, they won't come out of Miami with a fourth win.
So I'm gonna throw in a secondary X factor, if that is a thing.
Mm-hmm.
Victor Oladipo for the Heat is somebody who was injured for most of the past two seasons. And he is just one of those guys where when he checks in the game, he's someone who can put up 10 to 15 points quickly.
Mm-hmm. Energy guy too.
So that's something to watch, because especially in these like deep playoff series, they sometimes can be a lower scoring affair because guys are beating up on each other. So Victor Oladipo, former Hoosier, I might add, is someone to watch.
Yeah.
And you know, if we're throwing out additional X factors, I'm going to chime in on that bandwagon too. I think that there's a certain coaching edge that has to go to Eric Spoelstra. Mm-hmm. I think that he's got the championship experience as a coach. He was trained up under Pat Riley, part of that organization for a long time. Yep. And I think that he, I don't know what his game plan or strategy is, but he's got a guy in Duncan Robinson who pretty much led the league as far as 3-point percentages go. And I don't know if he teases him into the lineup. He's just saving him for the right moment, but it'll be interesting to see the basketball masterminds go to work and try to figure out what the other team is going to do. But I think that that coaching edge definitely goes to the Miami Heat. No offense to Boston. And I'm going to butcher his name, Udoka. But I think that for the Heat, they just have that advantage.
Yeah, the experience there throughout the coaching staff, that certainly helps.
Plus, they also get more vitamin D. So
yeah, I mean, a lot to be said for that.
Yeah.
It is one of
they've got a 22-year veteran on their roster that is still technically able to play. So.
22-year veteran.
Yeah. Udonis Haslem. Not many people know this. He still does play the sport of basketball.
The official OG, right?
Yep.
Yes, sir.
He's got 10 more seasons in
him. Well, yeah, if you only play 7 minutes a season, you could play as many as you want.
Move over to the Western Conference. Let's start in with the first series that finished up there, Golden State and Memphis. So as a reminder,
it's a shame.
It is. All three of us expected Golden State to come out of that. I thought it would happen in five games. You guys both thought it would go to game sevens. Maybe with a non-injured John Morant, it does. But it ended in six, so Golden State 1-4-2. Pete, any thoughts on this one? Anything that stood out to you as surprising on either end of this, either from the Warriors or Memphis?
I think the thing that stood out was that Ja getting injured with the questionable knee pull there from Jordan Poole, which as somebody who is a basketball player himself, I mean, I like to wear jerseys on the top of my polo shirts here on a Monday afternoon. I think that the jaw injury was the turning point of the series for me. I think that the series would have gone seven games if Ja was healthy. I honestly do not know who would have pulled it out of him. I probably would have leaned the Warriors because they have a little bit more firepower than Memphis, but.
And you're speaking of Andrew Wiggins when you say that?
Andrew Wiggins!
All-star!
Brenton's favorite player! Yeah, so takeaways. Draymond Green is still really annoying, and I hope that the Warriors lose to the Mavericks because Luka's the man. So what do you think, Brenton, about the Warriors and...
What do I think about what? The Dallas Mavericks and Luka Doncic? Or what do I think?
Come on, man. You're jumping ahead. Warriors Grizzlies.
All right. Let me press the pause button. I think as a basketball fan, because in addition to having this glorious podcast and being able to say whatever I want when it comes to NBA basketball, I'm also a big time fan, right? And I felt a little bit cheated as far as that series goes because we didn't get to see Ja Morant display his full regiment of basketball, just awesomeness. I mean, we got to see some of it, but as far as that series goes, I was looking forward to it going to, you know, game seven and having it be a back and forth series versus, you know, the former three-time champion Warriors with that crew that they have out there versus the kind of new young up and coming guys. And I was expecting a great series out of that one. I thought that was probably going to be the best series as far as all of those second round matchups went. And having him not be available for games four and five, or was it four, five, and six, or just five and six?
I think it was four, five, and six, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think you're right. So not having him out there and with the knowledge that he wasn't able to come back probably for the rest of the playoffs just left me with kind of a sense of disappointment. But I thought that the Warriors did exactly what we thought they could do. And that's, you know, kind of take over a series with the depth that they have as far as 3-point shooting, as, you know, moving the basketball up and down the court quickly. I just think that they probably are at this point in time the better team. I had hoped for more. Ja Morant is a fun athlete to watch, and the future is very bright for him. As far as Memphis goes, I don't think that they have to hold their heads down in their laps. They did a really good job of going toe-to-toe pretty much with one of the premier basketball teams of the league. And I think that, again, in addition to Ja's future being bright, I think that Memphis is they're definitely going to be back. So excited to see kind of this new up-and-coming team making moves and getting to, you know, what we hope to be some good, gritty playoff basketball in the future. I think that they have a lot to be proud of for what they did this year.
Yeah, I agree with that. I don't think Memphis needs to do a lot in the offseason. I think they're pretty much ready to just run it back. They can go far. Everyone else gets another year of experience. Keeping a team solid and together, that helps as well. Just everyone having that familiarity with each other, not just bringing in new faces all the time. So I think they're going to have another great season next year, especially if the Suns, and I will take that segue over to the other series, if the Suns regress, if Chris Paul is now too old to play basketball, apparently.
Is the Suns setting on Chris Paul?
Oh, wow.
Well, there's two of us in this podcast that are currently a few years older than Chris Paul. And I, as a healthy individual that's still ready to, at the drop of a hat, go out there and play basketball, I don't think Chris Paul is too old to play basketball, in my expert opinion.
Well, so then I'm going to need some information on what happened during this series. Because, if you look at the last five games of the series,
got some splaining to do.
Played poorly. Like his game yesterday, that was his worst. He was a minus 39. That's his worst of his career ever. Any game.
It's bad, man.
And the last five games of the series, he averaged like maybe 10 points and four assists. Like, that is not
struggle
an all-star right point guard leading the best team in the NBA through the playoffs with home court advantage. That's not.
So I can, Brenton.
That is not.
Really, really quick, Brenton. I'm just going to throw in there. I think a big reason was the emergence of Jalen Brunson. He is a old-school left-handed point guard who's physical, and he does not back down from challenges, and I really think that in like those last four to five games in the series, he actually played better than Paul did.
Oh, he definitely did.
Oh, 100%, 100%.
Saying something, mm-hmm. You know.
Yeah. So I think it's a multifaceted scenario why I'm going to do some explaining here, as you said, Pete. So I think that there's certainly something to be said about the head game of basketball. And I think that the Phoenix Suns, all of them, including Chris Paul, overlooked what was right in front of them. And that was they had a 2-0 lead. They were going into Dallas, and they just simply overlooked the fact that they were the, at that time, the better team. I think there was less than a 5% chance that the Dallas Mavericks win that series after game two concluded with the Suns winning. So certainly props to the Dallas Mavericks for showing resiliency, for giving their A-plus efforts, and for taking that series the distance and ultimately winning it out. But I think that Chris Paul was, number one, he was distracted because he overlooked him. But then you talk about the head game, right? So you know, there's this underlying article out there that somebody put hands on his wife in the stands, right? So I don't know what that did for his head game as far as like if he was distracted, if he had a problem or an issue. But I would certainly say that the way that Dennis Rodman used to jump inside of people's heads and just live there rent-free, that I think that this certainly took Chris's mind off of what he was setting out to do. And I don't know if that's ultimately 100% his fault or just the distraction was too much for him to kind of get over. But I don't think that we can take that lightly, that he was seemingly very distracted. And then the other thing, like that pressure starts to mount, right? So you win the first two games, you go into Dallas and you lose the next two. And then it's like, okay, we have a three-game series. Now, Phoenix had the advantage because two of those games are, you know, in the Sun Valley. So that again talks to the fact that they overlooked what Dallas was capable of doing. That being said, Jason Kidd made some great adjustments, and I don't think that the Suns were ready for game seven at all. They looked completely asleep. Yeah, they were basically just there in their presence, but they were just awful. So I want to pause, get your guys' takes, and do you think I'm way off base when I talk about him being distracted on multiple fronts, or do you think that I'm just showing a little bit too much mercy for Chris Paul and he's actually getting to the twilight of his career?
Well, I think something happened. Either, as you're pointing out, he was distracted, or we're going to find out that he actually injured himself in like game two or three, didn't mention it because he's tough and just wanted to play out the series, but it clearly affected him. Or it has to be come down to his age, because they won the first two games. Game two, he had a great game, like 28-6-8 or something like that. And then comes May 6th, his birthday, and he turns 37. And since then, he can't average in double figures and gets outplayed by Jalen Brunson.
Father time, man. It's undefeated. Yeah, so I was just touching on Brunson. The question is with Chris Paul is it seems very similar with James Harden. You know, they put up these huge season stats, and then when the playoffs come, it's like they just can't really fit the bill. But it's very interesting because Harden gets a lot of flack for those struggles, but people don't really want to mention that about the point god, Chris Paul.
So how do you think that he gets away from this kind of negative association for playoff performances that's kind of been attached to him for a little bit now? How does he resolve that?
Seems like he always has some like type of injury, right? Something like minor, something like comes up in the media that like he was like battling an injury. But I think it was Chris said it a few pods ago, was that, you know, come playoff time, no one is healthy.
Right.
So me personally, I'm putting Chris Paul on Front Street and questioning his playoff credibility.
Yeah, I mean, he will need to play a similar role that he played during the season and lead a team to a championship, I think, to fully remove that label, show that you can pull it off, and then show apparently that you can do that when you're 38, because that's what he's going to be next season if he wants to make it to the finals.
Because he's never been to the finals.
No, he has not. So he's got to get there. No, he was in the finals 2 years ago.
For Phoenix. Okay, yeah.
Or not even 2 years ago. Last year, right? Yeah, last season.
Short-term memory over here.
How quickly we forget. So, I just think that he has to change that narrative that surrounds him, just like James Harden has got to get away from his playoff shortcomings, that it's not enough to get there and just fizzle. You've definitely got to step up to that next level.
So next season, when the NBA Finals is Sixers Suns, we'll look back on this podcast and say, okay, here those guys can go for the playoffs.
They listened to our podcast, they took it to heart, and they definitely made a difference in their summer plans this year.
Yep, they're listening.
Yeah, oh yeah, no doubt.
They're planning their fishing trips, but yes.
Gone fishing.
So the game's matchup wasn't just Chris Paul. Devin Booker did not play well. DeAndre Ayton did not play well. And he also didn't play a ton of minutes, which I thought was interesting. He's a restricted free agent this offseason. What do you think happens there? And or what do the Suns need to do to put a team together that's not just great in the regular season, but can move in the playoffs?
I definitely think he's going to get a handful of offers. Now, being a restricted free agent, obviously Phoenix has the opportunity to match those. But I just think that the market for a guy that's what, 25? Oh, he might be, Ayton might be 26, right? Maybe.
We'll find out. He's in that range. He's in his.
Okay. So he's in his mid 20s. He's, I don't know that he is not a 7-footer. I think he is a 7-footer.
Yeah.
And he is somebody that can shoot and play defense and protect the rim. I think that I know that the game of basketball, at least on the NBA level, is changing and everybody's pushing towards that. Let's make sure that everybody on our team can shoot, you know, 30%, 35% from threes. But that being said, I think the NBA still has a market for a big man that can perform at the level that Ayton does. So I think that he's going to get offers, and it's really going to be up to Phoenix to say, can we run it back again is exactly as we had for the last 2 years? And do we think that's enough to move over the hump and get it done? Yeah. Pete, what do you think?
I think DeAndre Ayton is someone who is going to have a great career. And he's, Chris just pulled it up here. He's 23 years old. I mean, he's a freaking baby. So
yeah, I was aging him.
Young guy, athletic, long, you know, very, very skilled on both sides of the ball. I mean, I think that Phoenix needs to build around Ayton and Booker. I think with Chris Paul, I mean, you certainly don't want to dump him, but, you know, it starts to, you know, you start to kind of wonder, what, you know, like, when is father time going to officially be an issue with Chris Paul? And I think that we're starting to see signs of that.
Unfortunately, I think we are too. Great career, but everyone has to be looking at it and saying he's coming to the end of his career. Whether or not he's got enough left in the tank to lead, maybe not carry, but at least lead a team to a championship. I mean, they've got some good pieces in Phoenix. I don't know if they need to go out and add a bunch more, but I don't know. I think you got to find... You need to have either Devin Booker step up more and be take on like an equal share in leading the team or something. Find enough other role players around where on any given night someone else is stepping up, because Chris Paul is declining.
He is. And it's, I don't know, I'm very nostalgic. So, you know, the guys that were playing in the early 2000s and, you know, kind of that, for me, that really fun time of NBA when it, you know, every team or most of the teams at least had one perennial superstar. It was really fun to watch, you know, all these battles coming into play, and to watch somebody who we all agree is in the twilight of his career. It's just, it's like, okay, it might not happen for him.
Yep. So what happens then? Let's take a look at the next matchup. So Warriors and Mavs. I want to hear some thoughts and ultimately predictions for that series that starts Wednesday night. EJ, hit me.
Warriors have no one to guard Luka, so let's just start there.
Do you have that soundbite on repeat? I mean, it's just like nobody can guard Luka, which I have to say, I'm gonna bite my tongue here. I don't think you're wrong. I don't think that the Warriors necessarily have somebody to check Luka, but
they're going to put Draymond on him. I think is what they're going to do. Right,
yeah, they're probably going to do that, which may or may not
That's
work.
The fuck.
But yeah, I'm going to let you finish. I jumped in there, so
yeah. I really think with Luka, he is playing at a level right now. You know, it was a game 7 last night, and he was basically toying with dudes.
Yep.
You know, he was hitting step back threes.
Love that.
He was like laughing afterwards. Like, he was hitting fadeaway 3-pointers in like a game 7. It was like he was shooting in his backyard. You know, it's just unbelievable.
Warriors are a tough team. You know, they have a ton of shooters. Dallas definitely made some trades where, you know, they added a Spencer Dinwiddie, who is an effective scorer. You know, he's versatile too because he can play some defense as well. I think it's going to be a great series. I honestly just think Luka is the best player in the series. I'm going to go Dallas in seven.
And you mentioned the Mavs bring on Spencer Dinwiddie. He played fantastic yesterday. He is a capable scorer. It's interesting, though, because going back, and maybe I should go listen to our, I think our first podcast where we were talking NBA trades. When Porzingis left, I was thinking, all right, Dallas, like, you don't have a big man anymore. Like, you don't have anyone just with size, forget, you know, where they play on the court. But looking at this series and even a bit looking ahead to the Warriors series, I don't think it hurt them not having a big man. And now we're going to have matchups where I'd be surprised. You'll be able to look out on the court and there'll be no one like 6'8 or better.
Yeah.
And
small ball.
It's small ball, which I'm fine with. I like that. It usually increases the pace. We get more shooting. We get more excitement and fun. But I think ultimately the Warriors have too much overall talent. You have a core with Steph Curry, Draymond Green, Klay Thompson, that, and I know Durant was there for a little bit, but that core that went to five finals in a row.
Yeah.
Not that long ago. You, and now you bring back Iguodala because you got to get the band back together. They've got experience. They've got talent. They've got young emerging stars. I think combined, they will overpower Dallas. Luka's going to be great. Luka's a guy that he's a gamer. He wants the brightest spotlight, and that's when he's going to show up and play his best ball, which I love seeing. I think the Warriors have too much, both in terms of the talent and experience. I'm going to go Warriors. I do see it going seven games. I think it's going to be a great series, back and forth battle. But ultimately, yeah, Warriors in seven. Bimo, what do you think?
Well, good. I get to disagree with both of you. So I think this does not go the distance. Ooh. I think that this series is decided in six games. And like you, Chris, I think the edge goes to the Warriors. I'm going to say Warriors in six. And game six, I'm going to call it now, is a blowout.
Whoa. Bimo still doesn't put respect on Dallas' name. No respect.
And actually, that's a good call. Let's go back to last series because we actually did a review for the Suns versus Mavs. Both Pete and I picked the Mavs. I had a Mavs in seven, so nailed it. I get the bonus point on that one. But no, Bimo, you were going Suns. You didn't even like Dallas coming out of the last series.
I did not. So obviously, I mean, you guys saw something that I didn't see, and I'm still going to press that down to the bottom of the barrel and just say, I'm going to roll with it. I'm going to still not give the Dallas Mavericks the benefit of the doubt. And that's probably to my detriment, because if we look at our pundit scoreboard, I think that I am probably trailing.
You are. I can give people an update on the overall scoreboard if you like.
let's address it. Let's go for it.
So what I did for the first round picks, if you got the team correct, you got a point. If you got the number of games correct, you got a point. So I added all that up. And from the first round, Bimo had 7 points. PJ had 8. I had 10.
Whoa.
Then we go to the second round and points double, because that's what happens. But same, if you got the team right, you got 2 points. If you got it also the right number of games, 2 points. Bimo and PJ, you guys both had 8 points, and I had 12.
Huh.
So
you have a commanding lead. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah, but we're going in the next round, the points double again. So it's, I've got, you know, 22, then Pete was 16, Bimo, you got 15. That's just a game and a pick, right? So,
all right, so I have to go against you guys. So I'm going to stick with it. I'm going to say Golden State in six.
All right.
But Brenton, what happens when Dallas beats Golden State and they're playing in the finals?
Then I just got to pick the Eastern Conference. That's right. Dallas, you know, so I, you know, it makes me wonder as a Hawks fan, coulda, woulda, shoulda, right? If that trade never happened, I'm not taking anything away from Trae Young and the immense talent that he brings to the Atlanta Hawks, but the potential was there to have Luka Doncic be a member of the Atlanta Hawks. And
I would love that.
I just think that his
skill. They did draft him and traded him.
What?
Yeah, right.
Traded him?
Yes.
For they did.
And I think another pick later in the
draft. Atlanta.
Yeah, I know. So you can never imagine what could have been, because obviously those are alternate realities and they don't really exist. But that being said, I do think that he is a great ball player. He is a great talent, a force for the league of basketball. And I think that he's going to have a lot of fans for a long period of time. It was pretty cool to watch the game last night, even though it was a doozy. Just seeing Dirk there in the stands there in Phoenix, just making his appearance and giving support for that Dallas Mavericks team. I do want to quickly mention, I don't know how many people know this, whether you guys do or not, but Mark Cuban vowed not even as long as 2 years ago that Jason Kidd would never be a part of the Dallas Mavericks organization because he felt slighted with the way that things went. And I guess COVID changed Mark's mind. I don't know. I don't know what the reconciliation was that happened there, but there was definitely some bad blood between Mark and Jason. And you fast forward the calendar to now, and it seems like they've got a good working relationship and that team is firing on all cylinders, but it doesn't matter because they're going to lose. So
well, I have at it. Yeah. I mean, Luka is a tremendous talent. In my head, for some reason, I see him as a combination of Magic Johnson and Larry Bird with what he can do on the court. And I just like seeing him continually step up, having ridiculous games and leading a team that you look on the roster and you think, all right, you know, they've got some players, but no one else is really jumping out, hitting me in the face saying this is a star. He's the only all-star on the team and he's getting it done.
Also, let's not forget that Dallas does have 6 point guards on their roster, which is ridiculous.
Which is to me also part of this NBA, like run with multiple guards and you don't need a traditional five. Like you don't need a big man. Spread the court, attack the paint. You'll do just fine. Hit some shots. You're done.
Do you think there's any possibility with the way that both of those teams kind of play a smaller version of small ball? Do we catch any of them playing zone defense?
I don't think so. Not for long stretches. Just because they can also shoot. When you go zone, you're going to give up the three. But we'll see. Okay. I know it's exciting time in the NBA as we get into the conference finals. So looking forward to rolling into the next round of the playoffs. Sure to be filled with highlights, surprises, hopefully no injuries, but just some good basketball. So
yeah,
stay tuned for our reactions as the pundits make their way through the rest of these playoffs on the way to the NBA finals. Thanks for listening. This has been Peach Basket.
Keep on cashing those checks, OG.
Oh, boy. Tech genius is here.
Listen, I got a lot of thoughts about this podcast. I really hope that you guys discontinue what you're doing. You know, a lot of people are pissed about what the things that you're saying. We're going to try to cancel you. I've got about 7 different petitions that are signed right now. I was just telling BMO the other day, or yesterday, I'm so behind in the playoffs because I was in Florida for 7 days. And like didn't turn the TV on, which was good.
They didn't have the playoffs in Florida.
They don't have that. They don't broadcast them down there. I hate you all. This is so good.
What is the dealio?